It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
It's sunny. It's Friday. Sal's on with us. The only thing I'm missing is a big piece of chocolate cake. Sal's segment is brought to you by Outlet Liquor. New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Good morning, Mr. Capaccio. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, pretty good. My wife just went for a run. She came home. She said that it was it's a little cold out right now, but I'm looking at the weather today. It should get a little bit warmer. The sun has been nice. You know what I love? When it's not windy. It gets really windy here sometimes, and I hate when it's windy. So I like when it's nice and calm, and I think it's going to be pretty calm today. That makes it a lot better.
I have an outdoor exercise policy, and rule number one is no exercise. Well, rule number one is typically no exercise outdoors at all. But rule number 1B would be only above 50 degrees. So it's a little chilly this morning. It's probably, what, 40 maybe? I don't know. I'll wait till this afternoon when it's in the 50s.
Good for you.
So the call yesterday, first off, that was pretty cool. Like Brandon Bean gave you guys like an hour, which was nice because a lot of topics were covered. But Diggs was a big topic, not surprisingly. For those who haven't had a chance to listen to it, and we have, by the way, a link to the whole conference call if you want to listen to it in Sal's article at WGR550.com. Why did Brandon Bean want to make the trade for Stephon Diggs and make it at that point?
Well, it was super interesting to think about where this all started and how it all ultimately culminated with Stephon Diggs, a member of the Buffalo Bills. And that is that they basically started the process of looking for a wide receiver last year. They wanted one last year. Mid-season is what he said. He didn't say trade deadline, but it felt like, you know, when he was talking right around there maybe, because that's about where the trade deadline is. And then I think that as it got closer to the trade deadline, they, you know, were still looking. But I got the sense that it was a little bit before that they started inquiring about Stephon Diggs. And at the time it was basically they're not going to trade him. Okay. And then he said they checked back. And again, it wasn't the exact timeline here that he gave, but I'm pretty sure what he meant was right after the season, they checked back. And he said at that time, it was not a definitive 100% no from the Vikings. And they just basically said, we just agreed to a contract with him over a little over a year ago. You know, we don't really want to trade him. And he, since he got the sense that it wasn't a 100% no, he figured he'd stay on top of that. But in the meantime, they have to obviously go and look at other options. So they did. You know, they don't know if they're going to be able to trade for Stephon Diggs or anybody else. So they started looking at free agents. Now, it's interesting that we know also, based on what Emmanuel Sanders said to Rich Eisen in an interview earlier this week, that the Bills were, they had offered Emmanuel Sanders. Sanders said that. He said to give him a little time, give him one night to sleep on it. And then he said about that night, after he said that, the Bills made the trade for Diggs, which goes in line with what Brandon Bean said, which was ultimately, after the legal tampering period opened, basically, and they started talking to free agents, they had all these options. They were looking around, but that's when he called the Vikings up again. And he said the Vikings, as he put it, were getting antsy because there were other teams involved. And he said maybe around 9:45 or so, he finally made contact. It took 20 to 30 minutes, and they got a deal done.
One of the things I liked, Sal, I liked, you know, the explanation, when whoever asked the question about how much they gave up, including the first-round pick, and I liked his explanation of, you know, what were you going to get? Whether you got, if you stayed at 22, what receiver? If they moved up with what they gave up, they only would have moved up, what, three or four spots? As opposed to doing that and projecting out a rookie, you bring in, you know, and he had set it up by saying, you know, he blamed himself for not getting Josh Allen enough weapons last season and wanted to make sure he remedied that, and he sure did with Stephon Diggs. I liked that idea of, sure, I'm giving up assets, but let me get a guy who's a proven commodity as opposed to I'm going to bank on the 22nd pick coming in and having an impact right away.
Yeah, and I agree with you that it's interesting that he said, like, if they tried to trade up, what he felt was the value where they could go may have gotten them only to 18 or 19 with what they could do, what they could give up. And that's assuming taking into account what he gave up for Diggs, right? So you figure, if you package all of that even, that might only be good enough to get you to 18 or 19. And they did not feel at 18 or 19 there would be a, what he said, premier guy that they could write in, come walk in the door from day one and be ready to go. And I agree with that. And I've said that, and you guys know we've talked about that. There's a difference between you know, getting a receiver that's really at the top of the draft, like whoever that might be for you, CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, or waiting to 22. And you can still get a really good player at 22 or even at 18 or 19. But is that player, what is the acclimation process for him? You know, he's not going to walk in and be Stephon Diggs. And they wanted a Stephon Diggs. They wanted a guy now who could make that big of an impact. Now, we don't know if they could have gotten in the top 10 if they would have just done that. But it seems like they just felt like they couldn't anyway, so they'd rather go out and get a guy like Stephon Diggs, who is a proven commodity, and they're going to treat him like the first-round pick.
Sal with us, by the way. If you got a question or a comment on the Bills, you can dial us up at 803-0550 or 888-552-550. He was asked, Bean was, about the contract situation. So Diggs has 4 years left on his contract, and I'm curious. Actually, you know what? I jumped ahead of myself, Sal. He was also asked about the, quote, character question about Stephon Diggs. What did Brandon Bean have to say about that?
He said that they've done their recon. They are familiar with the player, and one of the reasons why is Terrence Gray, their director of college scouting, was in Minnesota. When Stephon Diggs was drafted, he was there for the first couple of years of his pro career. They still have connections to Minnesota that way. They also have connections through college people that may have known Stephon Diggs or people that coached Stephon Diggs in college. You know, and these guys, as you know, the tentacles and the webs of all these guys who work together, front offices, coaching staffs, things like that, they extend in the NFL, they extend in college. So from that respect, they were familiar with Stephon Diggs. And then the other part of it is, you know, he said, look, I'm sure that there are things that happen in Minnesota that he would like to have back. But he's really, more than anything, a really competitive guy. And that's where a lot of maybe the perception comes from. And he said, I know the word diva has been thrown out there. He does not see him as a diva. And, you know, wide receivers might be considered a diva. He said he considers him more of a dog, to use his term for Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. I believe it was Diggs who called Allen a dog, or Allen who called Diggs
a dog. Allen
I,
called, I think it was Allen calling Diggs the dog, but in a good way, yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And by the way, there's been a debate on if that's D-A-W-G or D-O-G. Oh. And every time I've written or said D-O-G, some people have said, no, he means dog, like the slang term. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know if he does, because dog, but what? No, because dog, the slang term, means like your best buddy. I think he's talking about a dog, like a dog who gets after things.
Yes, that's
to me,
what
that's
I thought.
A dog, a D-O-G.
Right, like a ferocious.
Right? So anyway, either way, it's kind of a fun debate. But no, that's what he said. He's not a diva. He's more of a dog. He said, but he feels that with the culture they have with the Bills, the locker room they have, he said, there's a misnomer that we're looking for a bunch of choir boys. That is inaccurate. We are looking for professionals, and they believe that Stephon Diggs is a professional.
What about the contract? He was asked about it, 4 years left, and I think there was, amidst all that, you know, Minnesota stuff, is it possible? One of the reasons was, you know, they knew he was going to ask for a big contract at some point, kind of like what Houston went through with their thought process with DeAndre Hopkins. So he goes over to Arizona, and there's a story out this week that Arizona is talking a little bit with Hopkins representatives. He's got 3 years left on his deal. Do you think the contract could be an issue for the Bills at all?
The way that Brandon answered the question, and he would not get specific about it, I have a feeling that it's something they're going to have to revisit, but I don't think it's a pressing need right now that's going to alter any plans they have for this year, or that Stephon Diggs is going to be unhappy. He even ended the answer to the question by saying he's happy to be in Buffalo. That's the best way that I could leave it. And he did not address, he said, I'm not going to get into contract things. So to me, that's at least opening the door, leaving the door open for, we're going to have to do something with him in the future. So I don't get the sense that this is a pressing issue that's going to cause the two sides to say, you know, what are we doing here? But I do get the feeling that maybe they're going to address it at some point down the road.
It's interesting, Sal. I thought, you know, there were a number of questions related to what's going on with the coronavirus and how it's impacting teams, their off seasons, more so about the draft at this point, but also about off season activities. And the whole idea of where the team is, really, you know, a year ago we were talking about, at least going into training camp, well, you know, the offense might get off to a slow start. The defense has continuity, but the offense has been overhauled. They're all getting to know each other. Now you fast forward a year. Diggs is the new face, but for the most part, that offense has continuity. The coaches, the players, everything. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too, in terms of what teams might be dealing with no offseason activities. The Bills now have continuity on both sides of the ball this offseason.
Yeah, they do for sure. You know, they have, and however you want to massage the numbers, I think people can play with the numbers how they want. But to me, they're returning 21 of 22 starters because – you know, Stephon Diggs is really the only main guy who's going to go into the starting lineup who was not a normal player on this team last year. Isaiah McKenzie, according to the snap counts, basically, he was the regular third wide receiver when they went to that on offense. But he's still back even, so they're out returning all those guys. But to me, that's 10 out of 11. And then on defense, I think they're returning 11 out of 11 starters because really they play a lot of nickel, and that's Taron Johnson. Lorenzo Alexander, sure, he is gone. You could count him if you want. And Jordan Phillips is gone, but Ed Oliver actually played more snaps than him. So, you know, to me, you're returning at worst, what, 20 of 22 starters when you consider both sides of the ball. So, yeah, the continuity is something that, you know, they very much value and want to keep going, especially on the offensive line, where I think you look at a year ago, Howard, a year ago we were talking about, oh, my God, four new starters on the offensive line. The only person who's not a new starter will be Deion Dawkins. And really, four new guys, right? They weren't even, it's not even guys who were on the team who were going to take over jobs last year. It's guys who are totally new to the team. But Bobby Johnson, I think, did a really good job last year. And now he's going to go into year two with all his guys. And I think that's going to be a big benefit to this team. And I think they really like having that continuity, especially in what's appearing to be some sort of shortened offseason where it probably will matter.
And if the Bills sell, if they do have a good season and things go well, next offseason, I think for the first time in a while, will be a conversation about who they might lose, like coaching ranks, right? The three that you point out, they're one of the few teams that have three guys stay together. I think if they do well, then whether it's Leslie Frazier, Brian Daboll, even, you know, down the line, quarterback coaches, you know, you can get your coaching staff poached over a series of good seasons. And that's not just always Super Bowls, you know. It's if you're good enough and show a good enough ability to get the most out of players over 2-3 years, you become a hot candidate for a job again.
Yeah, and I think, Jeremy, the jump that Josh Allen made year one to year two, you know, he wasn't the best quarterback in the league. We know it wasn't a top 10 guy, but I think his own personal jump from year one to year two was pretty significant in what he was able to do, especially after the first four games last year, the rest of the season, how he took care of the ball. There were some games where he just looked like, wow, this is why you got this guy number one. He looked like a franchise quarterback. And I think a lot of that has to be attributed to Brian Daboll. And even by Brandon Bean's admission, think about that then. Even by Brandon Bean's admission to what Howard said earlier, which is right, he said, I didn't think Josh even had enough weapons. Oh, so for Josh to make that jump with even what the general manager feels was, you know, lacking some weapons, I think was pretty significant for Brian Daboll to be in the position he was at the end of the year, where he actually did get some looks at, or at least one look we know of, as a head coach, which was the Cleveland Browns. And Brian Daboll's been in this league quite a while. He has a lot of connections. He's been in a lot of teams. He's been in college. He worked for two of the greatest coaches of our lifetimes in both college and the NFL, and that is Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. And that goes a long way, as we all know in these things, right? So Brian Daboll, to me, if Josh Allen takes that next step again, if the Bills have a really good year, if they go another round deep in the playoffs, I think it's going to be tough to keep Brian Daboll in Buffalo, and good for him if he gets a head coaching job. Leslie Frazier, for some reason, and I don't know what that reason is, I hope it's not because he's an African-American. He did not get the looks that he deserved at the end of last season to be a head coach again in this league. He is a fantastic coach, super well-respected. He's a former player in this league who was a Super Bowl champion, led the 85 Bears in interceptions, I think, or at least one of those Bears teams. Like, it's not like he doesn't have the pedigree, both as a player and a coach, to have the respect from everybody in an organization, including the players. And then on top of what he's done in Buffalo since he's been here, I mean, that guy deserves another shot as head coach. And I think Sean McDermott making him the assistant head coach like he did a couple months ago, I think that's him saying, I want this guy to be a head coach again because he deserves to be a head coach again. And now I'm going to give him even more so of what you all are looking for whatever you think he needs. And that's what good human beings do for each other. They try to help each other be better in life.
We're with Sal here on our Western Hotline, 803-0550 to join us. Again, if you want to listen to the whole interview, it's available at WGR550.com. There's a link in Sal's article. Speaking of defense, since you guys were talking about defense, Josh Norman's name came up and his signing. And at the time, you know, that was announced, you know, it was met with a great deal of skepticism. A, it's another former Carolina Panther. But I think more so about, you know, where his career had gone in Washington and how bad he had played down there. So from what you heard from Brandon Bean yesterday, we talked at the time, is this just a shot in the dark, take a shot, whatever, we think he's going to be the starter? From what you heard from Brandon and his explanation about Josh Norman, did you learn anything more about how Norman might impact this season based on what the GM had to say about it?
Yeah, I learned that he fought Cam Newton in a practice. I don't remember.
I don't remember that. No, he Bean brought that up, right? A quarterback deep. I do not remember
it
up. That.
He said it was. It's a good. He said battle, it was a real thing. Like the quarterback and the DB went at it, right? Huh. So I'm like, that's crazy. But he said that they just did not feel that he was in the right scheme for him in Washington, and we've talked about that. And maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. I don't think he was. That's right. But you still have to answer the question of, you could say he's in the wrong scheme. It doesn't mean that suddenly going in the right scheme, he's going to be a better player. He may have just lost a step. He may not be the same player. That's what they're going to have to figure out, but that's what they're confident in, that he'll be able to elevate his game and be back to, you know, not the same type of defensive player of the year type of player that he was in Carolina for a year or so, but at least someone who's going to be able to help this team be better than he was and get back to what he had been maybe a couple of years ago. So he said that that was definitely a factor in how they looked at him, and he said he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's going to bring an edge to their defense, and that's something that they really think that is going to be a factor in how he bounces back this year.
The free agent market, do you think is he still looking? He said something about bargains, right? Guys whose prices have come down?
Yeah, I mean, that's they're still looking at guys like that. I mean, who knows? You never know. They still have money. And by the way, they still have, anyway, they still have what? About $25 million in cap space, I think. That's a rough estimate based on some of the reporting and websites and not knowing the official contracts that are signed and things like that. But you still have to give room for your rookies that you draft and undrafted free agents. Now only the top 51 count, but that starts eating into your space a little bit. But they do still have, what, 22 spots, I believe, on the roster. Okay. They have 7 draft picks now. So, you know, you could go 15 undrafted free agents, but I suspect another player or two could be in the mix here. But those are going to be the, how did Doug Whaley or Buddy Nix used to call them, the dust settlers, you know, guys like that. Maybe, or maybe it was Brandon Bean. No, I don't know, but dust settlers was something.
I think it was Doug. Was that Doug Whaley? Dust settlers?
Might have been. I don't know. But that's what they are, basically. And we'll see. There's a few guys out there that we'll see. And they may want to wait till even after the draft. You know, there's no rule. They have to get to 91, which is what the Bills are allowed right now. They don't have to get to 91 by any sort of time. They can keep it short. They might want to draft and then see who's still out there after they fill some spots in the draft.
All right. The only other thing I want to bring up your podcast, and we're going to talk more about that next week, too. But would you please tell Brandon Bean the Bills are the team to beat in the AFC East?
He doesn't want to hear it, man. And you know what? I don't blame him. He said, you know, all this talk about writing the Patriots off and we're the team to beat in the AFC East. He said, no way. He said, it's comical. It's funny. The team to beat in the AFC East is the New England Patriots. And until you do that, you know, you're not the team to beat. So he said, you know, he gave praise a lot, obviously, to Belichick. He even brought up what he had done in the past with Matt Castle and when he lost Tom Brady and, you know, how well coached they are and, you know, how good of an organization they are. So, you know, he doesn't want to hear any of that.
So talk a little bit about your podcast, because there was a guy on there by the name of Mike North. And I haven't listened to it yet. I told you I want to listen to it over the weekend because I want to hear the conversation about NFL scheduling. So why don't you talk a little bit about that and let everybody know who haven't checked it out what that's all about.
Are you just Netflixing all day? You can't even listen to a 44-minute podcast?
No, I spent an hour of my day yesterday listening to Brandon Bean. You know, I mean, I only have so much time that I need to step away from work every now and then and kind of get away from sports stuff, you know?
All right, well, that's good. You're forgiven. I totally get that.
It was on my list, and then, that happened.
I hope you get a chance to. I really do, Howard, because I think you'll find it really interesting, and I think everybody else will, too. It's my Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. It's available at the WGR website, as well as iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you podcast, all those different platforms. But here's the deal. Mike North is the director, VP of Broadcasting and Scheduling in the NFL, and he's the NFL schedule maker. He runs the team. Like, he's the guy that makes the schedule. And we talked for 44 minutes because I just let him talk. He is fascinating to listen to on how the schedule is put together, what goes into it, the human element of all the things they put together on what are the best matchups, where to put them, how the pieces of the puzzle fit together. We talked about how the 17th opponent might be determined starting next year. I thought that was really cool. There's some ideas floating around. And then, of course, we got into the Bills. And I asked him about the conspiracy theory of having more home games in December because the league wants them to build a new stadium. He laughed at that and said, that's ridiculous, basically. He said, you know, there's a time where people wanted home games in December in Buffalo, and I'm suspecting the coach even might want that. And I said, I understand, I agree. But more than anything, I think the biggest thing I took away for Bills fans, what they would be interested in, Mike North basically said, look, when the schedule comes out this year, you're going to see the Bills a lot in a national television window, including primetime.
Wow. That's cool. That's why you, yeah, you tweeted you had to adjust.
You say
your
that's cool, Howard. You hate that.
No, I know, but from a fan, right? From yeah. Right. For me, I'm Sunday 1 o'clock. But from a fan standpoint, that's awesome. I mean, how cool is that going to be for everybody?
Yeah.
Even and look, he said he didn't specifically say like all primetime games, like five yeah. or something like that. What he said was national TV, but definitely he also included yeah. primetime. That could be the 425 game.
Yes.
I'm all for that. I'll take that. Right. Night games kill me, but 425 on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, toss me a 4 o'clock October fall game all day. Yeah.
Home game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Home
game. What's interesting is, though, he said that, you know, the Bills, obviously, for many years, they didn't resonate. But, you know, last year what they did, the ratings that they got, he said, you have two sides of the equation here that want the Bills now. He said the competitive side, the fans, Josh Allen, what they're building. They've been to the playoffs 2 out of 3 straight years. Like, the people making the schedule, like, yeah, the Bills, you know, the Bills matter. And then he said the networks are now going, we want the Bills. Now, you put that together,
yeah.
You're talking about the Bills, you know, really making a difference now in this schedule.
When was the last time the network said, we want the Bills? Well, I feel like too many years it was, well, we have to have them on once. Everybody's supposed to get one primetime appearance.
He did mention one specific game on the Bills' schedule that I feel like it's either going to be primetime or certainly some sort of national television. Do you want to guess which one that is?
I mean, the
Chiefs game. Yeah.
It is the Chiefs in Buffalo. Yeah. He said he's the only one specific. He goes, yeah, you look at the Bills' schedule, you see that Chiefs game.
Sunday
he goes, that's going to be a game, right?
Sunday
he goes,
night.
We got to think about that game and what it could matter. So who knows? I don't know. It could be just a national TV game in Buffalo. You know,
SNF,
I don't know.
Baby.
Showing to the whole country on CBS. But he did mention that. It's just cool. I think you should. I'm just gonna, you know, promote it for everybody to go out and listen to. I think you'll enjoy it. Like, he talked about specific matchups, like how you have to think about Pittsburgh and Dallas are playing this year, for example. They only play once every 4 years. And then they only play once every 8 years in Pittsburgh, which is where they're playing this year. So obviously CBS is like, well, it's only once every eight years we get this game. But Sunday night's like, yeah, but it's Pittsburgh and Dallas, and that's the two marquee teams. We want them. And Monday Night Football says we want them. And how they have to balance through all of that stuff is really interesting.
Okay, see, now I'm going to listen, but I don't want to wait any longer. What did he say about the 17th game and how they're going to figure this thing out? Like, who you play?
So he said that there's a couple of different sides that are trying to balance out how they want to do this.
Yeah.
He said there's the theory of it should be standings based for competitive balance purposes.
Okay.
And then there's the, but he says the networks don't care about that. The networks want to see the best games,
best game, right?
They want to see the matchups, teams. You want to see, you know, rivalries and teams and, you know, oh yeah, we're going to figure out who's, you know, best to put on here and, you know, create an extra matchup.
Sure.
He said, so that's one part of it. He said, so you're going to have to figure that out. He said, but the second part of it is, and where I think this is going is, by the way he sounded, Howard, you're going to get everybody in the AFC playing 9 home games 1 year, and then everybody in the NFC playing 9 home games the next year, because for competitive purposes, he said, I just can't see how we can justify a wild card team making it in with an extra win because they had an extra home game. And that makes sense, right? So,
well, every time that's brought
it's interesting how they're trying to work through this.
Every time that's brought up, I like to bring up that we already have that. A team has to go to London and lose a home game, and sometimes it's an AFC team, and sometimes it's an NFC team, and the Jaguars lose two home games. So I get that point. I do have a follow-up, though, on, like, having it standings-based, what does that mean? That the two best teams would play each other?
The crossovers, one versus one from a different division, two versus
you would
two.
Add, so you know how right now, you have the Bills play two teams that finished in second place
in the
this
same
year,
spot.
Like them. You would just add another one, like maybe one in the NFC or something like that.
Right, okay. Right. Adding one more crossover game in the NFC. To me, that seems like the most likely plan.
Yeah.
I thought you meant, like, you know, you would have it be determined late in the game, which I think is also pretty difficult. And there, you know, the other thing is that for network execs that want rivalries, there are already 16 games where you're going to hammer out a lot of your rivalries, right? The Bills are already playing the divisional teams a couple times, and next year there's good opponents, Chiefs, Raiders, Titans are in there. So it's interesting to track
two quick other notes. On this, he did say, Jeremy, on the international games, I asked him, can we get to a point where there will be one neutral game for every team? I mean, it seems like I was actually kind of surprised. He said he would love it as a fan. Logistically, it just can't happen right now, but that could very well be a goal.
I think they may want to do that.
How many?
It's just impossible right now because That's right. And you. But even international, I mean, he's like, How are you really? He goes, are you really going to have? Because you, what they try to do, and they don't have to. It's not the rule anymore. They do try still to give a team a bye week when they come back from, you know, international. He goes, are we going to do that in December? Are you really going to give a team a bye week in week 15 when they're in a playoff race and have an advantage in week 16 of who they go against? You can't do that. Yeah. So logistically, it's going to be very tough to balance all of that out, aside from the travel piece and the stadiums and all that kind of stuff. That was interesting. And then there was one other part I wanted to tell you about, which I forgot. But, you know, it was just a really fascinating conversation.
Good. All right. It'll give me, it's on my list of the weekend. And I will, for sure, we'll talk about it next week with you. Thank you very much, Mr. Capaccio. Have a great weekend, sir.
Okay, guys, you too. Thank you.
Sal, brought to us by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? 803-0550 to join us. 888-552-550 on WGR.
Really tough for fans to stomach knowing that if J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, if they were there at 54, it would be hard to pass on one of those guys. But you're looking for a complimentary back. You're not looking for a starting back. So I think one of those guys on day three, Josh Kelly out of UCLA, would make a lot of sense. I love his patience. I think he would be an asset. I mean, he doesn't break a ton of tackles, and he actually looks a lot bigger on tape. But he played really well at the Senior Bowl. He had a great week of practices. He was a guy that I think just with that patience, that vision, I mean, he's not an elite athlete by any means, but I think he would fit the mold for kind of that complimentary back.
That is Russell Brown talking NFL draft. He's with CoverOne.net. He was on with us earlier this week as we get you ready for the draft, which is now under 3 weeks away. You can check out that interview if you missed it at On Demand Audio at WGR550.com. Very convenient place to go to. Anytime you miss anything on the station from any of the shows, you'll find it all. Including listening back to entire shows in on-demand audio. It is brought to you by Northwest, increasing the value of you. 803-0550 to join us this morning. We've been talking about some of Brandon Bean's comments yesterday and whatever else floats into our brains. And you can always join us at any point to talk about the topic, to talk about the discussion we're having, or if you just need someone to talk to and you just want to have some social interaction via your phone, that's what we're here for. It is that kind of time here to help each other out. 803-0550 to join us or 888-552-550.
I have an obnoxiously hard trivia.
What do you mean by obnoxiously hard?
I mean,
like even with Hitler, I was trying to think of an
instant trivia. No, we're going to have to play a different format of instant trivia.
Okay.
Because it's so hard, but it shouldn't be. And the reason I was so think about the time of year, what usually happens around this date. What is it? What usually happens on April 3rd?
National championship basketball.
Exactly, right? So I'm thinking, all right, national championship. Most outstanding player.
Mop, yeah.
It might be the most forgotten award in the sports world. You win that, and it used to be that it went to somebody. You know, we'll illustrate this through who won it.
Yeah.
So instead of asking you,
that is obnoxiously hard, by the way. Yeah.
Right. For the last 10, because you don't know. Last 20.
You might. You'd have to tell me who won, and then I'd hope that I remember a player from that team.
And I'm telling you, you still probably would.
Wow. Okay.
So the challenge is, let's go back to 19. No, it's 2000. How many can you name?
None.
Most outstanding players in the last 20 years.
None.
Ooh.
I never remember most I couldn't even care less who the most outstanding player is. It never even registers on. It never even goes in the computer file to remember who the most outstanding player is.
But I think it's an indication of how basketball has changed. If we do just the 80s and 90s, right? The 80s and 90s include Isaiah Thomas, James Worthy, Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing, Purvis Ellison, Keith Smart, Glenn Rice, Danny Manning Christian Leighton.
That's the only guy I would have guessed him, and then either Leitner or Hurley were the only guys.
Both of them
guessed.
Won it. Leitner, Hurley, okay. Ed O'Bannon.
Oh, did you so say a UNLV? UNLV would have had a guy in there probably, right?
UNLV had Anderson Hunt.
Anderson. Oh, okay. I would not have guessed him.
You know, the 80s and 90s basketball had more four-year starters, and guys stayed longer, right?
Right.
And as you get into 2000 and forward, the names go from and guys that are one and dones.
I got one guy. I got only one guy that comes to my head right now.
Since 2000, all right.
This is my one and done. I'm guessing him, and then I'm walking out the studio. Tyler Hansbrough
is incorrect.
Yeah, because I thought North Carolina won his senior. Maybe it was his junior year or senior. No, he came back. Didn't he come back and
there
won
are
the national title?
Two players from North Carolina to win MOP in the last 20 years, and neither of them is Tyler Hansbrough. There are three, and none of them are Tyler Hansbrough.
Right, I got to text my son.
The answers for North Carolina are Sean May. Wayne Ellington, and Joel Berry.
Definitely wouldn't have gotten Joel Berry.
Yeah, none of those I would have known.
Well, dude, there's got to be Duke guys in here.
In the last 20 years, there's three Duke guys that have won MOP.
When was J.J. Redick there? J.J. Redick?
Doesn't matter. He didn't win it.
Okay.
Yeah, and Zion Williamson didn't win it.
No, he didn't win it because they lost in the regional final.
Shane Battier, Kyle Singler, and Tyus Jones.
Yeah,
There are three Connecticut players that have won MLS.
Ryan Boatwright.
I don't know.
Not correct.
I'll throw a guess out there. Kemba Walker.
Oh, very good.
Correct. Our first correct answer.
Who was the guard? Sorry, go ahead.
2014, Shabazz Napier.
Okay. Him. That's the guy.
2004, Emeka Okafor.
Yeah.
Oh, Emeka Okafor.
That's gettable.
Who would have been Syracuse's in 2003? Would it have been Carmelo?
Correct.
Yeah.
Brayden's got two now. Look, he's just smoking.
At least I told you I wasn't going to get any. It's not like I was bragging.
How about one Kentucky player? MOPs.
What was the year? 2012.
12. They won the title.
No, I got nothing.
Anthony Davis.
Oh, Anthony Davis.
Florida had back-to-back titles and back-to-back MOPs.
Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah was one, Corey Brewer.
Michigan
State.
Is there a Michigan State guy in there somewhere?
There is, 2000.
Mateen Cleaves?
That's correct.
Okay, I'm done.
There you go.
Yeah. But guys we did not name yet, Villanova had two.
Not him.
No.
Okay.
Never mind.
Dante DiVincenzo.
Yes.
And Ryan how do you say his name? Ryan Archidiacono. Yes, whatever. How do you say his name?
No, I was thinking of somebody else. Like there's an Archie.
Too many
Fracco
weird names from Villanova.
But like, look at that. 20 years. Is it the most forgotten award? I mean, the Heisman Trophy, you still remember who wins that. And MOP is just tough.
I got a better shot at the Heisman Trophy than the MOP.
Yeah.
Like, is the MOP... I assume they give out the MOP right before they give you the trophy to the team?
I don't know if it's given out.
Do they even do it on the telecast?
I'm not even sure.
Maybe that's another reason why I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's not like...
Like the NBA gives you... Like the Finals MVP is given out before they hand out the Larry O'Brien Trophy, whatever the NBA trophy is, right? So... Maybe they don't even recognize the MOP on the telecast.
While we're in trivia mode, do you guys want to actually guess the starting quarterbacks for Bruce Arians? Whether he's been a quarterbacks coach, offensive coordinator, or head coach.
How many guys are we
talking
about?
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 starting quarterbacks.
All right.
Well, Bruce Arians. Yep.
Go ahead, Jeremy. You want to start?
When I start naming them, Howard, write down these teams if they would have missed a game. But Peyton Manning.
Luck. Yep.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Yep.
Carson Palmer.
Yep.
Kelly Holcomb.
Yep.
Ryan Lindley.
Yep.
Probably, right?
You're going too fast. I can't name the teams.
I mean, there are a couple there when he's with Arizona, like Ryan Lindley and Logan something.
No.
John Skelton.
No.
Somebody like that.
That's a good guess, though.
Thanks. I wanted to work that one in.
He didn't work with Kurt Warner, I don't think.
No.
Max somebody.
No.
There was a guy from
Max
Fordham.
Max Leinart is who you're thinking
of. No, wasn't there a guy from Fordham by the name of Matt? Forget it. Go ahead, Jeremy. You're doing it. I got to look this up.
I mean, who played in between for the Manning Colts and the Luck Colts? Are we looking at, that's – what's his name?
Oh,
come on.
Skelton, okay. Oh, between Manning and –
Yeah. Jeez.
No, you don't have to worry about that. No, you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
So, did you mention both Browns quarterbacks that he had starting?
Kelly Holcomb and Tim Couch?
Yep, there you go.
Oh, Tim Couch.
Yep. So you're missing one quarterback from his tenure with the Cardinals, and or two of them, and two quarterbacks from his tenure with the Steelers.
Okay, so it's Roethlisberger, and boy, if you go back far enough, who's played when Roethlisberger was hurt? Or, I mean, is it Tommy Maddox?
Dennis Dixon.
Dennis Dixon, yes.
Dennis Dixon, there you go. And who else would have played for Pittsburgh when he's hurt? I don't know. The Arizona quarterbacks are both bad, right?
Charlie Batch.
Charlie Batch is the other Steelers quarterback, yes. So now you're missing the two other Cardinals quarterbacks that are not Carson Palmer and Ryan Lindley.
Who was the guy that was laughing on the sideline? Was that when Arians was
Derek
there?
Derek Anderson.
No.
No, it was before him? Okay, then it was too far ago. Okay.
This guy, if you want a hint for this one guy, he recently was a backup for a former number one overall pick in 2018.
Backup in 18 for number one overall pick.
Sam Bradford?
No.
He was in Arizona.
Is there a McCown in here at any point?
There is no McCowns here.
No Hewards, no McCowns, okay.
Howard, you should have an idea of who this guy is. He did go to your son's college.
Michigan State.
Connor Cook?
No.
No. Who else would... not Kirk. Drew Stanton.
Drew Stanton.
Yeah.
And the last guy you're missing is still around in the league.
Hmm.
In fact, he just recently signed with a team to be their backup.
Blaine Gabbert?
Blaine Gabbert.
Well. All right. That wasn't as tough as I thought it might have been. So that was good. Good trivia. Nice work there, Brayton. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550.
Didn't Gabbert just sign with Arians again?
Yes, in Tampa Bay.
Oh, he did sign in Tampa
to
back up.
He did.
Okay,
he will back up Tom Brady.
Very good. Good spot to be in. We are taking your calls, hanging out, chatting with you this morning here on WGR.
The chance of a lifetime for Luis Gonzalez. 2-2, bottom of the ninth. Game 7 of the World Series. Bases loaded. Infield in. One out. Floater. Center field. The Diamondbacks are world champions.
Now, if you're wondering why we're playing that, I am not trying to be a jerk, Yankee fans. I was watching Joe Buck on the call. Game 7, 2001 World Series. This is going to be my stat of the day. They were showing the replay of the game yesterday on MLB Network. So I'm watching the bottom of the ninth. Okay, then I was trying to be a jerk because I was enjoying the Yankees losing the game. Okay. In that bottom of the ninth, one of the guys who gets on base is Craig Counsell, who was playing for the Diamondbacks at that point. And I thought, wait a minute. Counsell was involved in the ending of the seventh game in the Marlins World Series in 97. So I had to look it up, and I'm going to make this my stat of the day. Now, He doesn't figure in the tying or winning run in the Arizona win. He's on first base. It's bases loaded. Gonzalez hits the little floater. And so Counsell doesn't score, but he is on base. The last two times a World Series has ended on a walk-off hit, 97 and 2001, both times Craig Counsell was on base. He was on base for the Diamondbacks on first in 97. Sorry, Indians fans, when the Marlins beat Cleveland. He actually had a sack fly that tied the game in the ninth. And then he did score the winning run on Edgar Renteria's hit in the 11th inning. So that's my stat of the day. Craig Counsell on base both times. The last two times there was a walk-off hit in the World Series. Stat of the day brought to you by Strategic Financial Solutions. Love where you work. Strategic Financial Solutions. There you go. See? It pays off to watch all these old games. When we get back, Jeremy, I got a question for you. If you missed our interview with Sal, he had a podcast out this week, and he talked to Mike North, who helps put together the NFL schedule, and he mentioned that, the Bills might have a few national TV games. Now, that's prime time or the 4:25 window on Sunday. So I wanted to go back over the schedule, look a little bit at how many prime time or national TV games the Bills are going to have, because Sal told us the networks are now saying, we want Bills games in the national windows. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Where's Betty? Are you snapping for Betty?
A little bit.
I need to hear a bark before the show ends. We got another hour. So I'd love to hear from Betty before the show ends, if you don't mind. I mean, she can tweet me, but it's much more fun if she barks. 803-0550 to join us on this wonderful Friday morning. 888-550-2550. Hey, reminder, in about an hour and a half, we're going to have our first winner in our New York Outlet Liquor Twitter contest. Hopefully, you got an entry in this week. If you didn't, you still can. It's very simple to do. Just tweet us at WGR550. And when you tweet us, use the hashtag What's Your Outlet? And then tell us your story. What are you doing to keep yourself occupied? How are you keeping your sanity? What are you doing while you're at home? You can just tweet us the story. You can send a picture. You can send a video. And then you will be entered into our contest. Every Friday morning at 10:30, we're going to pick one winner. That person gets a $25 gift certificate to Outlet Liquor. So join in the fun today. The WGR Outlet Liquor Twitter contest is brought to you by New York's only Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it is the place to buy a case. Outlet Liquor.
Got something to say? Say it anytime. Call, tweet, or text when you want, or hit us up with your comments on Facebook or WGR550.com. Say what you want when you want with WGR Sports Radio 550.
Jeremy White here for Riverfront Auto Sales, 1379 Niagara Street in Buffalo. Their offices are closed, but they are still open for business. And you can get in touch with the Riverfront team by calling 886-1626 or going to riverfrontautosales.com. When you go to Riverfront's website, you can take a look at what they've got on the lot. And Marty Senior, Marty Junior, they have access to thousands of vehicles that are not on the lot as well, bringing in vehicles from auction. So if you want to order your car, you can go to riverfrontautosales.com. And you actually have direct lines to Marty Senior and Marty Junior and their team at Riverfront right at the front page. So you can call Marty Senior directly. Call Marty Jr. directly. You can order your car, and Riverfront will take care of everything and deliver it to you as well. So while delivery is a big feature of a lot of businesses right now, the same is true for Riverfront Auto Sales. They will bring that next vehicle to you. 886-1626, their normal number, their personal, their direct lines right at the website, riverfrontautosales.com. And remember, of course, you can save money. You can save money by having your dollar go farther. Your down payment, they will match your down payment, so it's worth twice as much, doubling your down payment at Riverfront. 886-1626 for Riverfront Auto Sales.